opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good evening, everybody. This is Noel Didla tuning in from Jackson, Mississippi with Akhil Bakhari. And today we are going to have our second conversation of the grassroots human rights struggle, a movement for self-determination, economic justice, political power, and system change, a Malcolm X grassroots movement story, part two. I welcome you all to the show. And today is April 7th, 2017, and we had our first show March 31st, 2017. And we welcome all the audiences to this show on race treaty, and we hope that you join us via the call so that we can hear from you with your questions and with your comments as we do this program for the next hour. So, Akhil, we had a really good show last week with Taliba, with Dr. Akinyele, and we kind of sort of touched upon the various aspects of the grassroots movement's work in the Deep South, particularly focusing on the work that happened in Jackson and also the work that the grassroots movement has done collectively with the other chapters beyond Jackson when Katrina hit New Orleans and the southern coast of Louisiana and Mississippi. So, and we touched upon a couple of things that I think we can elaborate upon today. One is the international relations that the Malcolm X grassroots movement has with different communities, Black communities and brown communities across the United States and also beyond the nation state's borders, right? And the second part of the conversation, I'm hoping that we can talk about the current human rights struggle that we are engaged in through the political work that we are all trying to do, which is to get Chokwe Anthar Lumumba elected as mayor of the city of Jackson, right? So I'm hoping that those are the two pieces that we can focus on. So if you can kind of sort of give us a narrative of what kind of relationships that Malcolm X grassroots movement has built across the years with the Native communities and also with the different communities, Pan-African communities, and also around the diaspora, basically.
Well, first, thank you, Noel, for having me again tonight. And also thank you to the listening audience. Well, as we pick up the grassroots movement, part of the mission of the grassroots movement is, again, is the organizing of people, obviously, specifically people of African descent within the U.S. empire, but beyond that, those who would be allies of ours within the struggle for human rights and self-determination, which goes across nations, be it the Native people, be it North American whites of goodwill, be it Latinos, be it those in other countries across the diaspora and across the world. And in the pursuit of creating a better and just world, we've aligned ourselves with groups who are like-minded. The Venezuelans, for instance, particularly during the period that Hugo Chavez, when he was the political head of that country.
Mm-hmm.
However, there was a dynamic Afro-Venezuelan movement
that helps swept
him to power.
Mm-hmm.
Venezuela, as a lot of Latin American countries, there's a huge population of African people there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when the slave ships came across the Atlantic, they stopped in different points before they got to the continental U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And Venezuela obviously was one of those. So there's a huge Afro-Venezuelan population that's there. And as in most cases around the world, they are a hugely oppressed
mm-hmm.
population and underdeveloped group. But they also wage struggle.
That's right.
And those were some of the people that we were very fortunate enough to meet and collaborate with over the past 10 to 12 years,
mm-hmm.
Afro-Venezuelans. And we were able to foster some relationships with them.
Mm-hmm.
There were some dynamic ideas that we had and that we fleshed out with them that we were trying to carry forth with the election of the late Mayor Chokwe Lumumba and the late Prime Minister or President. I'm not quite sure how the political structure works in Venezuela, but the political head of Venezuela,
right.
Hugo Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, both men died untimely deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And so even with that, we had initial meetings with the subsequent head of Venezuela, Maduro.
Mm.
However, the political climate mm-hmm. has changed dramatically in Venezuela
mm-hmm.
and the interference, which is ironic that we hear on mainstream news about supposedly Russia interfering with American politics. That's rich coming from America.
That's right.
Who has a long and sordid history of interference, assassinations,
mm-hmm.
coups, and overthrows of legitimate sovereign governments.
That's right.
Which is also happening in Venezuela.
That's
and
right.
America has actually been working to undermine the Venezuelan government for ever since Chavez came to power.
Mm-mm-mm.
They were in support of a very small, rich elite.
That's right.
In Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
who are based on class and color.
Mm-mm.
And Chavez and those who struggled in Venezuela actually worked to curtail that, and they did. However, those forces are now more emboldened than ever, and they have a huge supporter in the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have longstanding ties with Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Since before the grassroots movement was founded in the 60s and moving to currently today, we still have strong ties with the Cuban people. Obviously, we have connections and ties with those that are on the African continent.
Mm.
We also have common ground and common bonds with the Basque.
That's right.
We share the same struggles, and their struggle is obviously a little more advanced than ours and a little more mature, but it was a struggle for self-determination. And as a matter of fact, we created ties with them back in the 80s.
With the Basque people who are in Spain right now.
Yes, right now.
Yeah.
And their struggle has been for independence and self-determination.
That's right.
Along with ours, we also have very strong ties with groups in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Again, our whole focus, and I would imagine those would expand
mm-hmm.
to other parts of the world, because we're people-centered and it's about self-determination.
That's right.
And the right to people to have a better life, and really changing the idea in the world
mm-hmm.
because the current idea in the world has led to the practical destruction of the entire world, whether it's, it has to do with ecological disaster or the just utter megalomaniac mindset of war.
That's right.
Perpetual war
that
so many people have suffered and continue to suffer today.
Mm-hmm.
So that has always been our struggle,
mm-hmm.
is to align ourselves with people wherever they are and whoever they are, who are struggling for self-determination, independence, and human rights for all people.
Mm-hmm. I do remember a conversation we have had in the past where we talked about the relationship between the people engaged in Black self-determination in United States and also the Dalits in India, mm-hmm. and the Dalits who were inspired by the Black Panthers, mm-hmm. and some of them call themselves Dalit Panthers, mm-hmm. and there's been some correspondence between these two groups also. And I'm not necessarily referring to you guys as that group, but there has been that level of conversation, whatever was allowed through technology at that time, or correspondence or communication forces at that time, right? So I think there's a rich history of, you know, oppressed groups from around the world trying to build relationships with one another, I believe, that is kind of lost in it translation.
You know, there is, I know during the that historic conference in Durban, the conference of... the National Conference for Against Racism and Xenophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And we had representatives there, and
as
other groups around the world.
World Conference on Racism, and Xenophobia. Yeah.
And again, we have studied, you know, groups and so those who are struggling in different parts of the world,
mm-hmm.
for self-determination and independence. And as the Dalits and others, as you've mentioned, study what we do, we also study what they do, and have always done that. Again, actually, in order for us to break the idea in which I've come up with this term, this equation in the world, and essentially, and I've modified it since it's what I call. Initially called white over B, white over Black, but I modified that to white over what they consider other.
Other, yeah. That's everybody.
That's the idea in the world.
Mm.
White over other.
Mm-mm.
And I mean that in the sense that those that foster white supremacy define what is the other.
All the time. And it keeps evolving, right?
All
and
the time.
It has kept evolving all this time. So one of the major observations that I've had of the grassroots is that there is this emphasis on education.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way you guys say educate, motivate, and organize, and I've seen that political education as a core component of how the grassroots movement grounds itself. Right, in its principles. So talk to us about that. What does that look like for you to have political education that is a lifelong process, right?
And it is. First and foremost, if you don't understand and have a solid analysis of why the world is in the condition that it's in, then you certainly can't educate and motivate anybody to move toward anything.
That's right.
And it is a lifelong, ever-evolving process,
mm-hmm.
because the dynamics of white supremacy, capitalism, and the neoliberal policies that infect the world are constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's having for, it's dizzying. It really is, because most people on the planet are struggling, just trying to make it from one day to the next. And these forces that impact their lives in such a negative way, all they can see is that I'm having a hard time trying to make it from one, and actually most people from 1 hour to the next. That it's trying to have an analysis as to what all you can see is that my life has been impacted horribly by whatever it is.
Right.
But what we try to do as a grassroots movement is to constantly educate ourselves, not only around who we are, our place in the world, and what our purpose is, and then understand the dynamics that are impacting us and people that are in our immediate vicinity, be it whether it's Jackson, Mississippi, Mississippi itself, or the American Empire, but also having a view that we can articulate clearly to our people and others who would support us in what we're attempting to do, so that it's not convoluted, it's not to something that's way out in the atmosphere somewhere in, you know, in the theoretical jargon that can really bog down a, you know, people are having a very hard time. And so, you know, sometimes we can get a little head heavy in our analysis of what's happening. So we're just plain English as to what's happening. So what we try to do as a grassroots movement is to, again, always constantly, as much as we possibly can, is sharpen our analytical and our theoretical mindsets, and then be able to articulate a vision to our folks that they can plainly see how we're, what we're talking about and how we're trying to get there. And that is a lifelong struggle, and it's a lifelong mission to try to do that. And one thing I've also found too, that a lot of times those of us who deem ourselves activists and revolutionaries, sometimes we underestimate the very logical intelligence of our people.
That's right.
And that's something that I've learned in working with people and working in these struggles for over 30 years. And that essentially what we do is, as I said, Mississippi, just like it's, whether it's in India or whether it's in Africa, whether it's in wherever people have their day-to-day struggles.
Right.
And that's all they can see that's in front of them. So what we try to do is not only help them understand why there is a struggle and why their lives are being impacted in a negative way, but also connect it with other places in the world that are having the same struggle. And in most cases, the cause of that struggle is the same entity.
The root causes, right, yes. right. And one of the beautiful things that I've noticed is, I mean, of course, I have not been engaged with the MXGM or, you know, the other entities that are comrades and allies beyond the last 3 years. But my 3 year observation is that this work is very place based. It's rooted in the reality, the struggles, and the history of this particular place. Would you say that is how the chapters, MXGM chapters, kind of sort of function based on? I mean,
there is a national, obviously, a national perspective in that we have chapters across the empire. And so procedural things are common across the chapters. However, each chapter has to adapt to the local situations. And you have to do that in order to be effective.
That's right.
What's a pressing issue in New York may not be a pressing issue in Jackson, Mississippi, or Atlanta, or Philadelphia, or D.C., or L.A. And the people are different. They're socialized different. Some of the culture is different. Obviously, there's always this binding thread between Black people wherever we are. But you are impacted by your environment. So you have those types of things. So the best way we should function is to immerse ourselves within the local reality of where we are.
Right.
To be the most effective.
Would it be true if I say that Malcolm X grassroots movement has evolved out of RNA and NAPO? How would you frame that? Because my next question would be, I see this reading the history, right? I see this evolution, evolution of ideology. And of course, the principles are, you know, they're constant.
Yes.
But the evolution of the way that MXGM has been functioning in the community, right? Mm-hmm. So the responsive evolution to me is looking at how people's assemblies were created. The responsive evolution is the hurricane work you have done and the youth camps and the basketball camps you have done. And also currently, since 2008, is it?
Yes.
Chokwe.
Yes.
Was run for city council. So just correct me if I've mentioned it correctly, the history of Malcolm X grassroots movement being birthed out of RNA or NAPO. And then let's kind of sort of start talking about how did you all decide on electoral politics, right?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, again, the New African People's Organization was born out of the RNA, and it was the philosophical, it had philosophical underpinnings of the RNA, did, but it took it a step further. In a different way. The basic philosophy was the same as it relates to independent land, independent self-determination.
Right.
The New African People's Organization took it a step further around the whole idea of people's war. The RNA was about that, but it was defined philosophically within the NAPO, which meant that we struggle on all levels of human existence in America, whether it's education, whether it's in the streets, whether it's rent strike, whatever it is, every level of human endeavor that our people face. Then the Malcolm X grassroots movement was born in the sense now we've got to broaden who can be a part of this in the sense, as I had mentioned, I think last week, that the New African People's Organization is a cadre-driven group with a strict philosophical mindset and a particular discipline that everybody may not be ready to deal with.
That's right.
When they are embarking on activism. And we fully understand that.
Right.
First and foremost, everybody may not have the same philosophy.
True.
Which is okay.
That's right.
So MXG, or Malcolm X grassroots movement, the idea was, okay, we're going to broaden this. And it allows room and space for people who may not have the specific idea around nationhood or land and independence.
That's right.
But want to struggle to help create a better world wherever they are.
That's right.
So MXG was a logical next step.
That's right.
And as such,
right,
if you're going to broaden and try to impact and organize as many people as possible, you cannot do that within the Black community unless you deal with electoral politics in some form or fashion.
And why Jackson?
Well, the idea that Jackson presented a very unique set of opportunities. It's an 85% Black city.
That's right.
With roughly 200,000 people. So it was just large enough and just small enough with a pretty homogenous population. In it. And as I stated last week, that part of the work of the New African People's Organization was to have cadre go to what we call the Black Belt South. And we had people in Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama. To go and organize and set up chapters. That was the mission for the late Chokwe Lumumba and currently Dr. Safi Omari, who mm-hmm. came down in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
From Chokwe from Detroit, Dr. Omari from Los Angeles.
Mm.
Although she was a native Louisianan,
mm.
I think she's...
She
grew up in Shreveport, I believe.
Okay.
But she migrated to mm-hmm. L.A., and that's where she became a part of the New African People's Organization. But at any rate, they came... Those particular folks, as well as other cadre, went to the other places I just mentioned
mm-hmm.
to work and organize and build. Mm. Chokwe and Safia came here. Obviously, that's where I was attracted and was became part mm-hmm. of the New African People's Organization. And after in 1990, MXG was founded here in Jackson, Mississippi. And obviously, we worked through that platform.
Mm.
And so over the course of that time, as I said, MXG was founded in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chokwe returned along with Safia in 88.
Mm.
And we started work prior to the founding of MXG.
So the work is the work in the community.
Exactly.
Right?
We were working in the community. That was, matter of fact, the anti-Klan rally that I spoke mm-hmm. about, anti-Klan march,
mm-hmm.
and actually defensive measure, which was what it was,
mm-hmm.
community-based defensive measure, actually happened before MXG was founded.
Mm.
It happened in 89.
Mm.
So at any rate, that work that we put in from that point in time up until 2008,
mm.
With various things, you know, we had done different things within a political sense, but not running a candidate or someone out of our own camp.
But you remember last time you mentioned one of the first formal people's assemblies would be what you guys called for.
The grassroots
convention.
Convention around the idea of Black people selecting.
One candidate.
Selecting
right.
and grooming that candidate and arming that candidate with a people's platform agenda that
That's
would
all,
serve the interests of our people.
That sounds almost like a political institute, a Black political institute, right?
And where? It was, and mm-hmm. it came, and that was nothing new.
That's not, not yeah, yeah, that's right.
The
you mentioned an example
framework
from Memphis or something.
Yeah, and it even predates that.
Mm.
There was this Black political convention in 72 in Gary, Indiana.
That's right.
In which Chokwe attended.
Ah, okay.
And others of our folks and other revolutionaries around the country and other folks attended. Mm. So, again.
Who organized that?
That there were revolutionaries, there were Black political people, because Gary had just elected a Black mayor.
Mayor, right.
Richard Hatcher.
Mm-hmm.
During that period.
Mm-hmm.
And in that period in time, Black folk who had been elected to political office were much more progressive and active during that period.
Yeah, Coleman Young in Detroit.
Than they are now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea at that time was about a Black political party.
Mm.
And so, as I said, we, in the spirit of an African concept of called Sankofa,
mm-hmm.
we reach back to our history in order to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so that obviously from 72, and then we come to 92 here in Jackson, Mississippi, and mm-hmm. we're a great part, a huge part of the grassroots convention and putting together a platform. And then we fast forward to 2008. And after an analysis of about, I would say, looking back to our period at that point and really studying it maybe 5 years prior to 2008, decided that in order for us to be more effective, then we would have to get into the electoral arena and it would have to be one of our own people.
Mm. Was it like a collective decision engaged in to arrive at that decision to run Chokwe?
Yes, it was. Okay. The initial idea was to have him run for mayor.
Mm. in 08 or 09.
Yeah, 08, yeah. 09.
Mm-hmm.
The political season, you know,
right,
it was actually November of 08 at an ideological conference here in Jackson, Mississippi.
Huh.
That it was brought forth. Now, there was a previous ideological conference the previous year where a lot of the discussion and the Cush plan, again, we had talked about this 5 years prior, but really seriously, in 07, and where we looked at some modification to the Cush plan, mm-hmm. and how it specifically would fit Jackson, Mississippi, and what we were attempting to do.
Mm.
So, as I said, in 08, here in Jackson, at an ideological conference, there was broad discussion about what we would do. An initial idea was to run for mayor. We had stressed that for two reasons. One was that we had committed our covert support,
mm-hmm.
for a particular gentleman who was running for mayor,
mm.
in the 08 election. And and covert meaning that as then and now, we don't overtly endorse any candidates other than our own that come out of the grassroots movement.
Right.
However, understanding and that we're part of the community and that we do have some influence here,
mm-hmm.
that there are some things that we would be willing to do for the right candidate,
mm-hmm.
outside of our own organizational structure.
Mm.
So that was the number one reason. The second reason that it was a little late into the electoral season,
mm.
to attempt a mayoral
run. Mm.
Which, again, this was November of 2008, mm. Which would have been roughly
six months
prior to the election, a little bit less than that.
Mm.
So we changed and said, okay, let's run for council seat
mm.
for the ward that Chokwe Lumumba was actually living in with his family.
Mm.
And it was agreed that that's what we would do. And it was also agreed what we would attempt to do while there. We studied what the council was, what it could be, and what it was not. The Jackson Council has a tremendous power.
Mm-hmm.
It does not exercise that power.
Right. I remember you mentioning it on our grassroots radio show. Yeah. Tell the audience what you mean by that, because we have a national, international audience. So tell us what it means.
And specifically, Jackson has 7 wards.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you've got 7 council people that represents each ward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, traditionally, and incorrectly, I might add, the whole point of the mayoral council form of government is that it's a strong mayor, weak council. And that's been the prevailing thought ever since the mayoral council form of government has been in place here in Jackson. But that's not really accurate, because I doubt very seriously if council people, previous ones, had even read the powers of the council.
Right, right.
And what we mean by that is this. If it functioned properly, the council has subpoena power.
Mm-hmm.
Some current council people, and I know a bunch of those who had served previously probably was not aware of that.
Has there been an instance of the council subpoena power so far?
Not to my knowledge.
Mm, interesting. And we've had instances where it would have come in handy, right?
It would have come in handy here lately in this current administration.
Mm-hmm.
The council obviously approves all budgetary measures and spending.
And there's no accountability structure in place for that.
Yeah. So, you know, if anytime you control finances,
mm.
you wield a tremendous amount of power. Now, whether you exercise that power is another question.
Right.
So our aim was to potentially to go in and give us better access to the inner workings of government, particularly the budgets,
mm-hmm.
and how the budgets are put together and create a more transparent vision for people, the populace who funds this budget, and how it's put together and where monies are actually spent.
That would be deeply democratic.
Yes. And also to where we could enact statutes or that's legislation for that body, we call, you know, municipal statutes that would benefit the populace at large.
Right.
So those were our two main focuses. So
for the council.
For the council.
How would you say Chokwe's presence on the council was? I one of the main things that I remember coming out of that when people look back and talk about what Chokwe did on the council is the non-profiling ordinance that he got passed,
what
right?
What we call them human rights ordinance.
Yeah, and it ties into this conversation.
Yes,
so,
it does.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things that we did. Well, first and foremost, Chokwe brought a self-determination and human rights perspective to the council.
Absolutely.
And the idea that this structure is here to serve the people, and his idea of serving the people and the people's voice supersedes his voice. And I'll give you an example.
Please do.
There is a very prominent church in Ward 2 that at the time that Chun Chokwe was council person there. And they were endeavoring on a housing project within Ward 2. And based on meetings and discussions with the that church, Chokwe thought it was a very good idea. And he would try to assist that church in helping in any way he could as a council person to see that it was done. However, he understood that that was his personal feeling. But he understood that he represented other people in the ward.
That's right.
So we held an assembly where it gave people an opportunity in the ward to come and voice their opinions about this particular housing project. As well as we did phone polls throughout the ward. And the overwhelming sentiment for those who participated in Ward 2 was that they did not want the housing project to go forth for various reasons. And as council person of that ward, Chokwe expressed his idea of why he thought it was a good idea. However, understanding that he represented the ward and that he would vote according to what his constituents asked him to do, which is what you are when you're in these positions, a servant of the constituents that send you.
Absolutely. And that's how he was responsible for his, you know, citizens in the particular ward.
Exactly. And so again, what he suggested to the church and those who were in support was to go back and do a better job of educating the populace in the ward.
That's right.
As to the merits and benefit of this particular project.
Right. Right.
And then bring it forth again if you have more people who would support you in that.
That's right.
Which is a democratic process.
Absolutely. And so, and then he becomes the council person.
Yes.
He has all these wins, anti-profiling.
There was, as we talked about budgets earlier, and understanding that traditionally speaking, a mayor of this city has always controlled and managed and hid the budget mechanisms from the council, so much so that the traditional practice was to submit to the council for a vote a budget for the city of Jackson maybe 2 days prior to its time. And there's state law that you have to, you know, vote to put a budget in place by a certain date.
So how would you read a budget in 2 days and make sure that all interests are represented?
Yes,
and,
it's impossible.
Right?
Not only that, there are, in the history of the council, have not been any economists on that board or accounting or accounting. So another measure that we put in place, and I say we as Councilperson Shokwe understood that there was a structure that put him in that office, and he represented the people of the ward.
Of course.
And so he was able to push and institute a budget analyst for the council, which had never, which was is amazing to me.
Was it a position created in the city government?
In the city, yeah, the city council has a, there's positions that the city councils manage, the city clerk's office.
Right.
Policy analysts, they all fall under the city council's
purview. Okay,
yes.
So this budget analyst was working with the city council.
Yes, they, as an employee of the city
council.
Council.
So he was responsible
to the city council to offer expert advice on the budget.
Budget, okay.
As a person who would have that kind of experience.
Mm.
That was instituted under... Councilperson's Lumumba's tenure, he put it forth. He got the votes to get it passed. What we found during his tenure as council that the kind of power that really needed to be exercised, we could not do on the council because of you have to have 4 votes. And as I said earlier, the council has tremendous potential power, but it has never really in reality exercise it because you have people of the agenda on the council and they would never in more important areas vote in lockstep to do some things that they felt like that they would it was taking them beyond where they wanted to go politically, which is ironically is serving the constituents of Jackson. And so through that period, we understood that if we were going to try to change governance in Jackson and create processes that would be allow people to participate in their governance, then we would have to take the mayoral seat. And so that's through that period of being on the council. That's where we start and say, okay, this is the next step is we'll have to take the mayor's office.
Awesome. Listeners, just wanted to give you a number to call us in case you want to have a conversation with us. It's 1-866-510-9025. Once again, it's 1-866-510-9025. Call us to have a conversation. Or else continue to listen to us. We are going to be on air for the next 18 minutes. We are having to cut short our program by an hour because our comrades were unable to join us for different reasons. So we'll be back on air soon. But please reach out to us at 1-866-510-9025. So that was how you all arrived at that conclusion that it's better to get into the mayoral office and then continue to do the transformative work that began at the grassroots level, right? And built through these years and continuing to build a form of transformative, city-based transformative structure that continues to bring in self-determination and self-sustainability of people, right?
Absolutely.
So tell us more about... One of the numbers that I looked at was when Shokwe ran for mayor, the kind of money he spent on the election or the kind of money the People's Platform spent is nowhere near in comparison to the candidate from the opposition, right?
Oh, my goodness.
How? And but yet.
Well, no, because we were on a truly shoestring grassroots budget.
That's right. And first time all of you were actually engaged in a political process.
Yes.
A big one, a municipal
Municipal citywide election.
Yes. But I remember busloads of folk coming down from different parts to organize, though.
We had people, first and foremost, we had people in Jackson, Mississippi, who it was just beautiful to watch that the reception of our ideas about how we could move this forward and understanding who we are in our history and how that our political philosophy has been branded by reactionary whites and blacks as somehow of the radical sphere. We wear that as a badge of honor,
right?
In the sense that you're only as radical as the times
allow you to
allow
be.
You to be.
Yeah,
and you have the our current environment is upside down. So there's, since we're attempting to stand right side up, it's viewed as somehow being not normal when actually our environment is not normal.
That's right.
And so just that simple analogy is what we, you know, try to convey and convey, I'm sorry, to our folks. So after 20 some odd years of work in the activist role, then we went out to our folks and said, okay, these are our ideas. Obviously, electoral politics, the way it is currently being practiced in Jackson, Mississippi by Black folk, is not working for you. We know and understand the inherent contradictions and failings of the U.S. political system. And we also understand there is very little that you can do to change the structure.
Absolutely.
To fit the conditions that we face. However, we can, as we've studied over the years, change how we interact with that system. And as such, transform our people so they understand and move to say this system does not work for us in its current form. And so that was our message.
Right. And one thing I've noticed is the kind of ownership that every citizen in Jackson took in order to show up and show out at the polls.
Yes.
And also beyond the polls to be part of taking ownership and responsibility of transforming the municipal governance structure through the 1% sales tax initiative also. So I've, as somebody who's not from here, but having, you know, had close encounters and understanding of, you know, municipal governments in other countries, right? So to me, this is a testament of value-based approach to principled approach to politics. And this is the first time I've seen something like this actually work and work so well. And how does that translate into Antar's run this time?
Well, again, that's the basis of all of what we do. The plan of how we do this hasn't deviated.
Right.
Obviously, there is modifications here and there to fit conditions that change over time. But the basic of it is to empower people. Shokwe's, the Elder Shokwe's campaign, the whole, the beauty of it is that it energized so many people locally. And then, as you
across
mentioned,
the races,
white, Black, Latino, Native peoples, then people from outside of the borders of Mississippi who were energized. And as you stated, came by the busloads.
They did.
To help people, you know, call, what can I do? What can we do to help you move forward? And we needed all of them because we didn't have a whole lot of money.
That's right. Right. You needed volunteers.
We need volunteers who truly felt energized about what we were attempting to do. And we were able to do that. And it put a people felt, had some hope. And not just hope, but some active hope in that. Because the message has always been that these are our ideas And one person is not going to solve these problems.
Right.
It has to be a collective empowerment of all of us to move what we're trying to do, move us forward and improve the lives of everyone here.
Mm.
And so that was all, that was a message originally for the elder Shokwe Lumumba. And it's the same message.
Continues now.
Continues with his son. Obviously, just a brief, his sons, well, obviously we lost the elder Shokwe in his untimely death, 8 months into his mayoral tenure. We obviously could not implement all that we were attempting to, being 8 months, as you said, the 1% sales tax that was voted overwhelmingly at 90% by this city to create funding to help resolve Jackson's infrastructure problem. But the idea around all of that was to use Jackson's infrastructure problem and turn it into an economic engine. The 1 cent sales tax was going to be a basis of leverage money in order to attract more money, because Jackson's infrastructure problem is a $1 billion or in excess of $1 billion problem. And he had a plan and an idea, as we talked about, to leverage the ones, so that's 20 years of money, roughly $15 million a year, that he could use as leverage to bring in more funding and take that funding and employ people and also create and open up spaces for entrepreneurial opportunities for those who had been locked out and left out of the entrepreneurial process of the city of Jackson, which primarily has gone to smaller and more powerful white economic base in Jackson, but also the bedroom communities around Jackson.
Right.
Jackson generates a tremendous amount of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
It just does not control it. So thereby Jackson suffers.
That's right.
We were attempting to change that paradigm. Shokwe passed. Antar, obviously, at that point in time, said he spoke with his father prior to his death in the hospital. And we, as obviously our comrade and our brother of so many years of struggle, you know, was taken away. So our whole focus at that time was on him, his remaining family, and ourselves. And Antar came to us, those of us in the organization, and asked if it would be appropriate for him to run, and that he wanted to run. And, you know, there was... there was a huge discussion around it, understanding what had just happened. And, he's a young man who's just recently married at that time with a new baby on the way. He had previously lost his mother some years back, and now he's lost his father along with his sister. You know, they're the only two remaining folks of their immediate family, Antar and his sister Rekia. And that, did you want to take on that challenge? And he said he did. And we did. Obviously, a special election is in roughly 2 months. And as a political novice who name recognition to the point, yes, people knew him, but did not know him, within the framework of electoral office. He was able, he actually got more votes in the primary than any other candidate. And in the runoff, we were not successful. However, he garnered over 19,000 of the roughly 40,000 votes that were cast.
That's right.
Which was a tremendous feat for a political novice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as such, in as we always do, as a cadre group and a revolutionary organization, we did an extensive debrief of what we did wrong, how we failed him and his shortcomings. And when I mean extensive, that's something that lasted almost a year.
Wow. So a whole long process.
Yes, of really honing in on what our shortcomings were, where we failed, where his shortcomings were. And mm-hmm. when I say us, I mean organization.
Organization,
then
right.
And himself as a candidate. And what we needed to do to be better. And so we come again to this point, and so we feel that we are better equipped. And he is absolutely better equipped to seek this office. And right now, as we always say, we always run as if we are trailing in the polls. But enthusiastically, I'd like to say we are leading in the polls.
We are. Mm-hmm.
But again, we haven't won anything. And yet. So it's we continue to work hard to make sure that we're successful this time and continue the empowering idea of people participating and dictating their own governance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is a very, very, very critical moment in the history of Jackson, history of Mississippi,
yes.
in the history of being in a neo-confederacy, right? And perpetual neo-confederacy.
Perpetual.
Yes, yes,
yes,
of course.
Literally.
Yes, yes. And I think we deserve a lot of good energy and prayers coming our way, and also, of course, a lot of support. So if you are interested in supporting the work of self-determination through electoral politics in Jackson, Mississippi, please visit www.lumumbaformayor.com, LUMUMBAFORMAYOR.com, and check out ANTAR's platform, which is the people's platform.
Yes.
And then please donate either your time, your money, or other resources as you are moved to do. And Akhil, thank you so much for sharing this history. And I think we should continue this conversation probably after elections, maybe when we have more time, and probably continue to bring in maybe different chapters and different ally groups also to take part, because there's a lot of work that is happening in Jackson through the Coalition for Economic Justice, through Cooperation Jackson, and through the people's assemblies, all of them undergirded by the principles of the Malcolm X grassroots movement. And of course, when ANTAR gets into office, we will continue to build the city into what it has always had the potential to be, but has never been so far, until Chokwe showed us that we could do it,
yes.
right? Together we could do it. And for 8 months, every single one of us took ownership of that, and we saw tremendous progress in 8 months, and our hopes were dashed again. So I think, but as people at the grassroots level, as oppressed groups, our struggles continue to always, find the strength to get up and continue to walk and run and, struggle, right? So definitely looking forward to what we are going to continue to do.
Again, as you mentioned, for those in the listening audience, any expertise that you may have to offer as we move forward in putting together a plan, whether it's in policy and planning, whether it's economic development, whether it's municipal, municipal public works, technology, again, go out to the website, electlumumbaformayor.com. Check him out on his Facebook page of the same title. There are numbers you can dial and call, reach out if you offer time, resources, whatever it is, because again, this is truly a people's movement, and it extends beyond Jackson.
That's right. And thank you so much, Ray Streety and Black Talk Radio, for giving us this opportunity yet again to continue to share the story of the grassroots movement and the history of the human rights work that the grassroots movement has been engaged in Jackson, Mississippi, and through the various chapters around the country. Thank you, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, and free the land.
Free the land.